Well, fortunately, we have Mr. Corbett with us. Hi, James. How are we doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good over here. How are things in the USA today?
Well, they're fine. What happened to the stock market today?
Well, Italy happened to the stock market today. As we've been talking about for a while here, the Italian elections were taking place this weekend, and it seems that there is no clear decisive winner, which was something that a lot of people were expecting, but some of the individual results that are coming out of Italy are quite surprising, at first glance anyway, including a party that came out of absolutely nowhere called the Five Star Party that is led by a comedian, literally a comedian who has just gotten into politics and managed to garner a quarter of the vote. In fact, it was the largest party by itself without regard to the coalitions taking place there. So comedians are winning. Berlusconi looks like his center-right coalition is going to take control of the Senate, which is another quite surprising result. And this is having an effect on the markets because this impasse, the deadlock that it seems to be developing, the split between the lower and the upper house in Italy, means that it will be difficult for a government to impose any more austerity or to get anything passed through it unless there's some sort of grand coalition that takes place. So the Italians might be heading back to the polls in the near future to try to resolve this, or they might try to muddle along with some sort of coalition. But either way, it looks like Italy might be threatening to destabilize the Eurozone once again. So we saw markets plummeting today as a result.
But, of course, basically, all of these socialist programs don't work. I mean, you can't keep spending money you don't have. You can't keep living on borrowed money like we're trying to do here. And Barack Obama says, oh, we can't cut any of the spending at all. We can't cut any spending. Well, of course, we increase the taxes. It'll hurt the economy, but we can't cut the spending either. And the only solution is just keep borrowing and borrowing and borrowing. And eventually, of course, you end up destroying the infrastructure of the nation. This is what happened repeatedly down through the ages. And those of you who haven't read the little book we carry, it's called Fiat Money Inflation in France, and it's the story of what happened in France in 1791. And it's just, it looks like a blueprint of what's going on in America today. You cannot keep spending money you don't have. We have a semi-prosperous economy here in America because we're living on borrowed money. And the government is pouring money out, and because the Fed is creating money and buying up bonds and mortgage bonds, and so that the Treasury Department can actually send out their checks to all us retired people, and we can live very well. But one of these days, ladies and gentlemen, the House of Cards is coming down, and Barack Obama knows that. He knows that. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our game, I guess, is James Corbett. And James is telling us, of course, what happened in Italy. As a result of the uncertainty is in Europe, why, of course, the market plummeted down more than 200 points today. Is that right, James? I don't watch the market that closely, but it sounds like it's well over 200 points the market was down.
To be honest, I don't know the figure. I wasn't watching that in particular. I just know that it was down significantly, and I know S&P 500 futures have also plummeted significantly, and that's going to have a big effect on a lot of people who were being placated by the media that was having all these headlines about how the time to get into stocks is now because bonds are going down and stocks are going up. And lo and behold, it looks like the stock market is heading down again. And interestingly enough, insider sales are reaching a two-year high on the S&P 500. So it has now reached a ratio of 12-1 sales to purchases, which means insiders are buying one stock for every 12 that they're selling, which should be an indication of where the insiders are putting their money in this stock market economy. And I think it's important to note the austerity conundrum behind all of the calculus that's going on right now. Because you're talking, for example, about governments can't continue spending more than they make, and that's, of course, certainly true, and we don't want governments to make more than they're making now, because, of course, governments don't make money, they can only steal it from their citizens. But in the economy that we're living in the way that the system is set up, of course, the entire economy is based on the input and the stimulus from these from the government. It's based around the idea that government has to hand everything down from on high. So when we're in a system like that and these governments start cutting back with these austerity measures, it ends up actually dragging down the economy, so that the Eurozone, in fact, just had to revise their estimates for the year and admit that once again, the Eurozone is going to be in recession this year. It's going to be negative GDP. So we see time and time again when these austerity measures are implemented, it has a drag effect on the economy, and things start to go downwards instead of upwards. And even the IMF had to come out and admit that they were wrong in saying that austerity was going to increase, is basically going to be a boon to the economy. It's in fact a drag on the economy. And that's what things like what's happening in Italy right now, or what happened in France with the election of Hollande, show, is that people are more and more rejecting these types of austerity economics that are being imposed by Mario Monti and the other Goldman Sachs banksters who have been imposed on them. And I think this is mostly what we can read out of the Italian election. For the most part, this is just a reaction against Mario Monti and his policies, which Italians tend to think of as German imposed austerity.
And hold the thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is James Corbett, and we're talking about what's happened in Italy. And, of course, they had austerity programs were put forward by the establishment leader of the political party there. And, of course, the people are unhappy with that. They don't want to give up all their pensions, and they want the government to keep providing all these things for them. They certainly don't want to pay any more in taxes. But what the average individual doesn't understand is that there is a worldwide group, in my estimation, that runs everything. And if you read their publications, as I do, one, that magazine is Foreign Affairs Magazine. You read what Richard Haass, who is the chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, says, and Chris is also a member of the Trilateral Commission. And about two or three years ago, he wrote a lead article, it's always a lead article, about the importance of austerity, and how we were going to have to impose austerity all throughout the world. And this is exactly what's going on. People think these things are happening by accident. I don't think that for one minute. I think they're all planned. But basically, of course, what they're going to do is lower the standard of living in Europe and lower the standard of living in the United States as they attempt to raise the standards of living throughout the world. This is what they've been doing. But, of course, there's no way that, unless you have massive increase in taxes, that you can provide everything for everybody. And, of course, what happens? The system collapses. You have chaos. And then you end up with a dictatorship, which is exactly what I think some people would like in America. And I really do believe that is why they're playing this whole situation up about the 20 tragic children who died at Sandy Hook School there in Newtown, Connecticut. And we never talk about the thousands of innocent little helpless children who've been slaughtered over in Syria during these last 2 years by the terrorists and by the rebels that we are financing with your tax money, ladies and gentlemen. Why don't we ever talk about those helpless little children? Well, I think because they want to disarm the American people, and I think they know there's going to be real problems here, and they certainly don't want the people to be able to defend themselves from the excesses of government. But James, what are your thoughts? People don't want to hear what I say. They want to know what you think about what's going on, about the economy. And certainly I think it was so interesting that James has stated that the insiders, and those are the people with the big bucks, the people with multiple millions of shares in the stock market, are selling their shares frantically. And they're selling 12 shares for every one they buy. I think that's a very important statistic. And people should understand that when they tell us it's a great time to go into the stock market and really make a lot of money, that's the time to get out. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, I think that that's a pretty safe bet. The only safe bet is to do the opposite of what the main economic headlines are saying, I think, most of the time, unfortunately. And I think you're right on a lot of the different points that you make there. But I think that what has happened with these austerity cuts and versus the type of socialist largesse of people like Hollande, what I think that really the people of the world are being led into a false choice, a false dichotomy. And you could almost say that these austerity measures, or in the U.S. Situation, the sequestration cuts that are going to be kicking in on Friday, unless Congress manages some sort of alternative plan, is almost like a type of false flag in which the governments are going to collectively across Europe and in the U.S. and in other places besides, are cutting back on certain social programs which are going to be headline news as the media loves to report on these types of things and to try to highlight all the points at which the system is failing because the government doesn't have enough money. And this creates in the public the desire, oh, well, we need bigger government. We need more. We need to give them more of our money. We need to raise taxes in order to fund these programs. And it creates the illusion among the public that there is no other way to imagine society working than through government-mandated and government-centralized programs. And it is quite a conundrum because, to a certain extent, from within the system as it has been created, that's almost true, because so much of the system right now is centrally managed and centrally financed that when you start taking that away, there are going to be people who suffer and fall through the cracks in that system. So it's a question of how to transition away from this into a system that could actually be sane and actually make sense and doesn't revolve around bigger government. And that kind of transition is almost impossible for most people to imagine right now. But it's interesting to note there's one example in the United States right now that has something of an alternative and that actually seems to be doing quite well for itself. So, Dr. Stan, would you venture to guess what is the state in the union that has the lowest unemployment and the highest growth rate?
I bet it's North Dakota.
It is North Dakota.
I wonder why North Dakota is doing so well. I mean, it's so cold up there, the coldest state there. But why are they doing so well? And I think it's because they allow freedom up there. Go ahead.
They do, and they have a very interesting system, in fact. A lot of it has been put towards an oil boom that's taking place there right now, but it's important to note that, for example, the Bakken oil field stretches across both Montana and North Dakota, and yet Montana still has relatively high unemployment rates. Or you can look at Alaska, which has much higher oil production but still higher unemployment rates. You can look at and compare North Dakota to a lot of different places and see that it's not about the oil. In fact, one of the big differences with North Dakota is that they have a state-owned, state-run bank, which is kind of like a mini Federal Reserve for the state itself, which actually takes all of the state's revenue, is put into this bank, which then subsidizes and underwrites loans to individual farmers, etc., because North Dakota also has the strictest laws in the United States against big corporate mega agribusinesses and tends to support small farmers instead. And that's enabled through loans from this state-run bank, which kind of gets around this Federal Reserve system. So this is an example of an alternative that could be imagined as opposed to this top-down government federal bureaucracy, which is running the United States as a whole. And North Dakota, for one, is profiting from this because it seems to be the best alternative amongst what's available in the United States. And I don't think that ultimately the state-owned bank is going to be the solution in the long run, because I think that there's problems with that system too. But certainly it's better than the Federal Reserve system, which is underwriting the United States right now, or more accurately, not underwriting most of what's happening in the U.S. right now.
I think most people really don't understand the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank, and nobody will tell us who owns all of the stock. But we do know, of course, that the six major banks in the United States, and we're talking about J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and certainly Wells Fargo, those six major banks control something 69 or 70% of all of the financial assets in the United States, and they control an awful lot of the stock in the Federal Reserve, a privately owned central bank. They really run the government. The government doesn't run the central bank. The central bank certainly has enough money. The largest contributor to Barack Obama was Goldman Sachs Bank. And so they select our political leaders. They can't let the American people know that. And, of course, we go to the polls every 4 years to vote for the candidate of their choice. And until people understand the system is rigged, there's a small group that are really running it. Nothing really makes sense. But these people, of course, have an agenda, and they're utilizing, they control the media, they control the corporations, they control the banks, they control so every aspect of our lives. The American people don't understand that this using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about this one world authoritarian structure. The average American is so oblivious, he honestly believes what he reads in the newspapers and sees on 60 Minutes. Well, Sidney James, what's going to happen next as far as the economy here in the United States? Sidney, we're sort of limping along right now, but that's because the central bank, the privately owned central bank, is putting $85 billion into our economy every single month. In other words, basically, they're just putting all this money out and so go down to stores, big box stores, lots of people there. But that's because all this money is out there. Why don't we have inflation? Certainly we have inflation. We have much more they're admitting. But we do not have the runaway inflation that eventually you get sooner or later when you have certainly unrestricted currency production. Why don't we have more inflation? And is there a danger that one of these days we are going to have runaway inflation?
Well, in periods of deleveraging, when you have people trying to get out of debt, pay off instruments, and to liquidate what they have, you have actually deflationary tendencies because people are getting out of the type of debt that becomes leveraged out hundreds of times and becomes so much a part of the money supply. So you have some money destruction tendencies at the moment. And of course, when that reverses and when this money that's being created out of nothing is starting to be put into the economy, that's when we start to see the inflation really kicking in. And we do, of course, have inflation in a lot of different products. And of course, they try to cover that up with the phony baloney CPI numbers. But I think it is just a mathematical certainty, and it is only a question of time until the inflation starts to get out of control, as it already is in places like Argentina, which of course had to implement price controls earlier this month to try to keep a lid on the inflation, which their official government statistics puts at about 10% annually, but the independent statistics puts it about 30%. So Argentina looking at the possibility of yet another economic collapse, a monetary collapse, like they've experienced every 10 to 20 years for the past 40 years or so. I think the next shoe to drop really in the United States is going to be this sequestration cuts that are coming on Friday. And I use the term cut in the most liberal sense, in that when you actually look at the numbers, the projected sequester budget will, in the end, it will defer the time at which the U.S. GDP is 100% of federal debt by 2 years. So it does basically nothing. And when you look at the actual graph, it's almost ridiculous to see the difference between spending levels where they are now and where they'll be after these cuts. But as I say, I think really what this is an opportunity for the government to point out every crack and flaw in the system and say, look, this is because you're not giving us enough money. And I really think that there's going to be a huge push in this early part of Obama's second term to raise all sorts of new taxes and to raise taxes generally. And
our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And basically what they're doing is they're cutting about 3% of the expected increase. Now, this is not, they're not cutting anything, they're cutting the increase back. We'll be back in a moment. James, you go right ahead.
Exactly right. They're cutting the rate of growth. They're not actually cutting the numbers absolutely. And of course, now you get all the people like the Pentagon press secretary just came out the other day saying that the cuts that are coming to the Pentagon because of the sequestration budget will be unbelievably unmitigating, and it will be a disaster for the U.S. military, etc., etc., as if this is actually a cut to their budget and not just a cut to the growth of their budget. And we get a lot of political tricks like this. And I think that this is going to be used to try to make the case for increasing taxes on the American public. And unfortunately, a lot of people in the Obama Hope and Change camp are going to buy into it hook, line, and sinker. But it's important to note that the income tax, of course, is not only a fundamentally flawed and system, and in fact was never actually ratified. The 16th Amendment that supposedly made the income tax possible was never properly ratified. But that being what it is, I mean, the system as it stands is still a joke, especially when you look at the companies that, for example, in the last few years have not only paid no income tax, but have actually paid negative income tax. They've actually gotten money back. And you start to look at the bottom line of companies like General Electric that had $10.4 billion in profits a couple of years ago and paid negative $4.7 billion in taxes. And you can go through a list of company after company that are in similar situations where they're getting all sorts of money back through this system, which it speaks to where the real money for the system is coming from. It's not from the big corporations with their insider globalists at the helm. It's coming from the average person on the street who has to fill out their 1040 according to the government, and more often than not ends up paying for the rest of the government largesse, or at least underwriting the government largesse, because again, the government can just turn on the printing press whenever they want. So it's a ridiculous system, but unfortunately, so many people have bought into it hook, line, and sinker, because as you say, so many people get their news from, at best, something like 60 Minutes, but at worst, something like the Hollywood, Never Never Land that they create for people, the little myths and memes that they spin out, including things like Argo, which apparently has just won the best picture at the Oscars, or so I'm told, because I don't follow such things, but just that type of blatant propaganda is where, unfortunately, a lot of people get their understanding of the world today.
Well, that's why I do what I do, and that's why I appreciate your coming on the program with us, so that we can try to get people to begin thinking differently. And we don't know how many people are listening. We do know they're listening all over the world, and we get communications really from Europe and from Asia and certainly from Australia, New Zealand, and it's amazing to realize, because through the miracle of the internet, of Africa, South America, people are listening. People are learning, and hopefully they're beginning to tell others about what's really going on. But certainly, basically, you can't keep spending money that you don't have, and that's what we're doing here in America. Basically, because we're either going to, and down the lines of this, with 10,000 people retiring every single day, going under Social Security and Medicare, people are not dying fast enough to have this system. Of course, eventually, the whole financial structure of America is going to begin to quake, and of course, it's even going to get far worse with the Obamacare, because when the Obamacare comes in, of course, there's going to be another 30 or 40 million people are getting health insurance, and of course, more and more people are suddenly going to be, companies are going to be dropping out. There are going to be more and more people going on to Medicaid because they're no longer getting the health insurance they're getting today, and it's going to be simply a disaster for them and for the government. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is James Corbett, and who actually writes for the International Forecaster, and I always enjoy his editorial. It's on the front page. And if you don't take the International Forecaster, you will certainly, you need something to keep you abreast of what's happening financially, and I think they're doing a very good job since Bob Chapman is no longer with us. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. Well, James, certainly what I'm hearing, and I want you to verify that it's true or not, but that if you look at the amount of shipping that's going on in the world as goods are being produced in one country, is usually in the Far East and then shipped to America or Europe. But the shipping certainly is down dramatically, which means, of course, that the imports in many of the countries are down. Is that true or not?
I don't know the numbers on the shipping per se, but I do know that retail is definitely suffering in the U.S. right now, as is evidenced by all sorts of store closings that are happening across a bunch of different retail chains at the moment. And there's a projection for 2013 of 200 to 250 Best Buy stores will be closing down, 175 to 225 Kmarts, 100 to 125 Sears stores, 300 to 350 JCPenney's, 125 to 150 Office Depots, 190 to 240 Barnes & Nobles, 500 to 600 GameStops, 150 to 175 Radio Office Maxes, and 450 to 550 Radio Shacks, just to name a few. So there's definitely some deep cuts that are happening in the retail sector right now, which is going against the trend that they've been talking about, that this is an upswing for retail at the moment. And I think that we can see from these store closings that are happening across the United States that there is definitely a downswing that's happening, and it might not just be a type of boom and bust cycle. This is probably evidence of something more fundamental. That's a transition that's happening right now, as more brick and mortar stores are being leveled in, as more people go online for their shopping. So I think we're seeing a transformation of the economy on top of the type of bust cycle that we've been seeing for the past several years. And I think that's complicating matters. But yes, I think that there are some definite downswing trends in the retail sector generally. And I would be surprised if that's not showing up in shipping as well. But I don't have the numbers on that specifically.
And basically, because even Walmart is having some problems that they have reported, they're not doing as well as they have in the past. So, and of course, this is the same thing we know. Certainly, they're having real problems over in Great Britain. I think they're having real problems in Europe. Certainly, France is having very real problems with their economy. Nobody wants to admit socialism doesn't work. You can't keep spending money you don't have indefinitely. But certainly, what do you hear about this? Of course, everybody knows about the southern countries in Europe having problems. And what about France? What do you hear there?
I haven't heard much out of France lately, but I do know that the UK just had their credit rating cut to AA plus, I believe, from AAA. So that was expected to have an effect on the sterling, for example. So far, the pound sterling has fallen a little bit with in relation to the dollar and the euro, but not as much as people were thinking. But it certainly is a sign of what people are thinking about the UK economy. And I think you're right. I think that the things that are being concentrated on in some of the southern states, or the so-called pig states there in the eurozone, also reflected in northern parts of the continent. But I think that this is all part of a broader destabilization of the global markets, which we've been seeing. And I think that shouldn't be surprising to us that this is being reflected all over. And just to back up what you were saying about Walmart, I should add that for people who don't know, there was just an internal memo that was leaked last week from a Walmart executive describing February sales as a total disaster, quote unquote. So absolutely, Walmart is part of that retail slump that's taking place across the board right now.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. And of course, our plea to you is to get your financial house in order, get out of debt as much as you can, be prepared to cut back and have a lower living standard. You're going to need that. And of course, if there's any way that you can get your money into assets that will not be destroyed as the whole financial house of cards comes down, this is the time to start thinking about it. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. And we're living in very, very difficult times. Certainly, the temporal violence and war over in the Middle East is picking up. I have fairly reliable, and I can't absolutely say it's going to happen, but that Israel is going to invade Syria sometime in the not-too-distant future, because they cannot allow the terrorists to get their hands on the chemical and biological weapons that are there. Because nobody ever asked, where did Syria get the third largest supply of chemical weapons in the entire world? Where did Syria get them? They got from Saddam Hussein. Where did Saddam Hussein get them? He got them from us. Why would we have given them to Saddam? Maybe to create a war today. Right now, James, I want you to tell our listeners how they can certainly subscribe to the International Forecaster, how they can get your writings, because I know you put out a newsletter, and we have John calling from Quebec. We'll be with John in a moment or two. But if you're out there across America and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. And I will tell you, I've been at this for over 50 years, and I just have a feeling that we're moving towards a climax in history. Certainly, James, why don't you tell our listeners how they can subscribe to the International Forecaster, and then, of course, how to get your material.
Absolutely. Well, if people are interested in the Forecaster, they can go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com, and they can check out some of the articles there. They can also sign up to get their introductory copy of the Forecaster for free, or you can, of course, sign up to become a subscriber, and the Forecaster comes out twice a week, every Wednesday and Saturday, upwards of 40 pages of information that is in this e-newsletter. It's jam-packed with information, and not just my editorial, but other editorials, other news articles, all sorts of information that people need to make their investment decisions. And people who are not online can also write in directly to the Forecaster to get more information. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's PO Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. And for people out there who are interested in myself and my own work, I have a website, CorbettReport.com. That's CorbettReport.com, where I keep track of not only economic news, but also geopolitics, history, philosophy, science, all sorts of other subjects besides, so people can find out all of my work from that website.
All right, very good. Well, let's go to John, who's calling us from Quebec, Canada. Get our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Hi, John. How are we doing?
Hi, Dan. Nice to talk to you.
Are you hearing us on shortwave?
That's right. Oh. I listen pretty regularly on the shortwave to your program, and I appreciate it very much. I also used to subscribe to the International Forecaster. And I would appreciate a complimentary copy. I've just gotten the address now, and I'll probably be getting in touch with that gentleman soon. There's something I'd like to say in favor of the president, is his economic policies, he is not attaining his goals due to foreign legislation against the United States of America. And what I'd like to say is Quebec has a language police policy, and many things you find in Quebec here are the unilingual French labeling. But when a product comes in from the United States, it must be bilingual. So it's an unlevel playing field against the United States of America, and this situation needs to be addressed.
All right, fine. Thank you, John. Anything else you'd like to say?
Yes, I'd also like to say that it's against the law to drink and drive or to be under drugs because you're a hazard on the road. Many Quebec drivers leaving Quebec are unilingual French and drive American roads. They cannot read your signs. They cannot follow the instructions of a state trooper, or they cannot leave a note on their vehicle saying what's wrong. And I think there should be language proficiency tests at the U.S. border for any truckers coming into the United States of America, because they represent a hazard on American roads, just like a drunken driver
okay.
or a guy that's driving
okay.
under the influence of drugs.
Okay, John, thank you very much. And let's go to Henry, who's calling us from New England. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And hi, Henry. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, actually, a comment and I was question.
And how are you hearing us? How are you hearing us in New England? Are you hearing us on the internet or are you hearing us on radio?
Yeah, you're coming in okay. I just heard it.
Are you on shortwave? How are you hearing us?
Yeah, I'm hearing you on the shortwave at 3.1.
Okay, very good. Well, anyway, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, he was talking about North Dakota earlier. And there's this woman who wrote some book, and her website is called Webb, W-E-B, like Walter Edward Boyd, webofdebt.com, or is it .com or .net? I think either one. I think it's .com. It's not both. I think it's .com. And she talked about this Bank of North Dakota. Of course, when I try to call information to get it, then I get Wells Fargo. But I don't know if it's a special name. I have to find out. I'll browse it in a while. But this website, and she had this book. I think the book is called Web of Debt. She talked about how the banking was done in North Dakota compared to everywhere else. Just like in Maine, I don't know if you know this, but a governor who ran for governor, who got elected in Maine, he only spent $28,000 on the entire campaign, everything, start to finish, just about, to get elected as governor of Maine. Now, why wasn't a lot of money like it is in California and all the others? Well, the reason is that Maine has certain strict laws that if you're a private or if you're a corporation or something, you can't fund the politicians, and if it is, it's only a very minimum amount of money. Or either you can't. I think there's something like that. Some of these states in this country have a few laws that are similar, like Switzerland and some European countries. That's interesting that it's more protective of their
country. Henry, do you have a point that you wanted to make about the
Has he heard of this woman? I forgot what her name was.
Her name is Ellen Brown. She's at webofdebt.com.
Yes,
I have interviewed her on my program before. We've talked about the Bank of North Dakota, bank. So you can look that up online, actually. In fact, my interview with her.
Ellen Brown, and we've interviewed her as well. Anything else, Henry?
That's about it. But what I was going to say, what to think of is that we really should find out what they have so many good protective laws in some of these states. I was thinking about writing a book and researching on this and putting it together.
Well, when you do, why would
we... can make laws like that nationally.
I think you're absolutely right. Basically, of course, they buy the elections, they buy the presidency. It's bought and paid for. Thanks very much. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-295. If you have a question for our guest, James Corbett, I would love to hear from you. And I think that Cynthia Ellen Brown's done a very, very good job of pointing out the strength of this system where they have a state bank. Where, of course, Cynthia, you can actually, there's not a great deal of profit for the big banks, the major banks that run America, and they're not able to control the economy there. In North Dakota, the economy is actually a control by the Bank for the People and not for the benefit of the multinational banks and corporations. And many of these people will get $20, $30, $50 million a year in bonuses and payment. That's just obscene. And of course, it's getting worse. It's not getting any better. How do you feel about that, James?
Well, I think there are different models for a system that we should be transferring onto, and there are people like Ellen Brown and Bill Still and others who argue that there should be a government-controlled bank as opposed to the privately controlled banking cartel that we have right now. And then there are the others, the Misesians on the other side, who think that the only gold is money and that's the way the economy what economy should be based on. My tendency is more towards a free market, so I am more in favor of something that is not government-controlled, because as good as something like the Bank of North Dakota has been to a large extent for the people of North Dakota, that still depends on people, basically it still depends on the government being good and being accountable to its the people who live there, etc. And I don't think that that's something that we could reasonably count on in many different places in the globe. So I think ultimately the solution is going to have to be more about a free market rather than some sort of government controlled banking system. But there's something to be said for both alternatives. And at any rate, it's still better than the banking cartel that currently runs the United States.
Well, Bill Still is a friend, and we've gone around and around on this, and certainly I agree with you and not with him. And yet he certainly has done a great deal of work on the financial system, and we should be indebted to him for his research. It's nothing about his facts that it's only the solution, of course. And if you could trust the government with power, why, of course, there'd be nothing to worry about. But you can never trust men with power. They will always misuse it. In fact, as I think it was Thomas Jefferson said, "Speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution." And of course, incidentally, William Greig writes our latest newsletter. I just completed editing it last night, and he actually uses that quotation from Thomas Jefferson. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we have Kevin calling from Ohio, listening on shortwave. Hi, Kevin. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. Certainly, Dr. Stanton, in the line of thought you're passing through on economics with all the purported closings of establishments, there's always someone around to pick up the pieces. We could go back to the past, like W.T. Grant, EMP Grocery, and all, and economic times like this. It really appears to me that a place that I will not frequent, that Walmart, will be picking up the pieces. They have the infrastructure. So what fades away, somebody gets it. There will be something left. That's what I wanted to talk about. Hope Mr. Corbett would have a statement about that. Now, listen on air.
All right, what are your thoughts on that, Cindy? Kevin is saying, well, look, this one place closes, but of course, you know, then another one will open, and so it'll all work out in the end. And basically, of course, I think that that may be true up to a point. But of course, it was a book. It was written many years ago, and the name of it escapes me. Perhaps you can remember, James. But it was basically supposedly it was written in the 1880s. It was about life in the year 2000, and I think it was called "Looking Backwards." It was written by a man named Edward Bellamy, and he looked forward to what was going to happen through this competitive system, and eventually, of course, everything was going to be wiped out economically, and it was just going to end up with one big major corporation. Now, this is what we're really seeing today, with more and more of the companies just being wiped out. But there's always something maybe like Costco, and you go to Costco, great deals, and great displays, wonderful policies, and maybe they'll be replaced by something else. But down the line, of course, there are those who want the centralization of power and wealth, and eventually, of course, as Edward Bellamy described in his book, Looking Backwards, which you can get on the Internet, why we ended up with one corporation that was in bed with government. And freedom, as we know it, was simply gone, and everybody was regulated from the cradle to the grave. That was written by one of the founders of the original socialist movement in America. Go ahead. James, what do you think about this idea that as corporations have closed down their stores, somebody will always pick up the situation?
Well, it's been an old truism that during these times of boom and bust, that wealth is neither created nor destroyed, it's only transferred. And I think that has been historically true. So, for example, in the 30s, in the Great Depression, we can see that as a transfer of wealth from basically the bottom to the top of the system. So the smart money knew where to be invested and made even more money through the pain and suffering of the average worker. And I think that has been true historically, that's just money kind of transfers around to different people. But I think we are actually living in a different system now because of the incredible amounts of leverage that have been put into the system through the futures and the options and the derivatives, which have created this trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in notional money that in fact doesn't actually exist. So when that bubble pops, that has an effect of actually destroying money or wealth that actually never really existed, which unfortunately the system has been based on for the last 10 or 20 years and increasingly so. So I think we are living through a different type of collapse at the moment, and I think it's going to have a different effect. But to a certain extent, it's true that that companies like Walmart will be beneficiaries in the long run to a large part to this, to the detriment of the average mom and pop stores. And of course, that all works in the favor of the globalists who love these big mega corporations that have that source all their goods from slave-made goods in China, because that works out for this globalization, which is also very much a part of the agenda.
Here's what Edward Bellamy wrote. The nation organized as the one great business corporation in which all other corporations were absorbed. It became the one capitalist in the place of all the other capitalists, the sole employer, the final monopoly in which all previous and lesser monopolies were swallowed up, a monopoly in the profits and the economic economies of which all citizens shared. The epoch of trust had ended in the great trust. And then he concludes the book with this statement. I, who having beheld in a vision the world I looked on, sang it in words that once again and again during these last wondrous days had rung in my mind. For I dipped into the future as far as any eye could see, saw a vision of the world and all the wonders that would be, till the war drums throbbed no longer and the battle flags were furled in the parliament of man and the federation of the world. Then the common sense of most shall hold a fretful realm in awe, and the kindly earth shall slumber, lapped in universal law. And that, of course, is the dream of the people who are working within the secret and covert organizations today in their effort to bring about a world government, without realizing, at least in my opinion, that they're carrying out the objectives were laid out 4,000 years ago, over 4,000 years ago, by Nimrod, who tried to do the same thing and God intervened. There's been a constant effort to bring about a world government ever since then, but I believe it's been delayed until this time. However, there is a powerful move today to create a world government, and that's why, of course, America has recently moved our troops into 35 African nations. Nobody asks, why would we move troops into 35 African nations? Very simply, the people who control America, both political parties and the banking and the media, basically want to use America's financial and military power to bring about a world government. It's coming. Our guest is James Corbett, and we're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Do you have a parting thought, James?
I have a few, but I suppose just in parting, I think some big geopolitical events that will be taking place this week include a meeting in Rome of the opposition in the Syrian crisis, and also a meeting in Kazakhstan on the Iranian nuclear negotiations. So that'll have some effect.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll just give you a few minutes just to wrap that thought up for us, for our listeners out there. And our game is James Corbett. We're living in exciting times, ladies and gentlemen. The most exciting times of your life. James, go right ahead, because I concur. I think that this is going to be some major events taking place, but you pick up the story. We've got about 3 minutes.
All right. Well, first I wanted to point out that Kazakhstan is going to be hosting the P5 plus one negotiations with Iran. So that's the five members of the permanent members of the Security Council plus one other who's escaping me at the moment. Germany is also a part of these talks. And so that's going to be taking place in Kazakhstan starting tomorrow. And we'll see if there's any quote-unquote progress made in these talks, but interestingly enough, the IAEA came out with a report last week saying that there's worrying new developments in the Iranian nuclear crisis, in that Iran is now attempting to use newer centrifuges to enrich their uranium, which apparently is supposed to be some sort of ominous thing, even though, of course, it is also equally used for peaceful nuclear purposes as it could be for theoretical weapons. And the same IAEA report also said that there's no evidence whatsoever that Iran is diverting nuclear material to a weapons program, but that somehow didn't make the headlines. So the latest round of negotiations are probably going to be focusing on the types of sanctions that have already been put in place, including sanctions that are trying to stop the gold for gas trade that had developed with Turkey and other such things. So some potential moves happening there. Also in Rome, there's going to be a meeting of the so-called Friends of Syria. The Syrian opposition was threatening to boycott because they said that they didn't see enough support from the international community. So now apparently there's going to be some support from the international community. The US and UK are already pledging more support in terms of funding to these rebel groups, which we know are basically just foreign terrorists that are invading Syria at the moment. And so that's going to be taking place this week. And even as Syria says that they're willing to come to the table and negotiate with the opposition, but now Washington is saying, well, that's not good enough. So I think we're going to see this come to probably a heartbreaking conclusion as the Syrian government gets toppled and terrorists get put in power.
But, of course, the problem is, of course, that Israel cannot allow the terrorists to take control of the chemical and biological weapons that the Syria is holding. And apparently this is a real threat to Israel.
Well, that's going to be the next part of this stage play. I think that they want this type of crisis, which would then justify the military incursion that they can't do right now. And that's the same strategy that they used, for example, in Libya. I think that's what they're going to use in Syria as well. And suddenly it's going to be, oh, look who's in charge now. Oh, we better send our troops in. So I think it just provides more of an excuse for further military incursion.
I certainly agree with you, and this is why I'm really so concerned about the defenses that are unfolding. Anyway, God bless. James, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.